Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, April 22nd. They say to a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Maybe to Donald Trump, every problem looks like a reason to reduce immigration. Last night, he announced a 60-day moratorium on new green cards or permanent residency status for people. His official reason is the coronavirus economic shutdown.
I want people that are in this country, I want our citizens to get jobs. I don't want them to have competition. We have a very unusual situation.
And it is an unusual situation. But we also know that the Trump agenda has always been to reduce legal as well as illegal immigration. So is COVID unemployment an excuse that he's hitchhiking a campaign item onto, or legitimate because we do have this unemployment spike? Not barred, by the way, are any guest workers who the country is allowing in to help with the food supply. Reportedly, farmers and agriculture business organizations exploded in anger. That's the way the Times put it, exploded in anger at the prospect that guest workers would also be banned. In fact, the New York Times headline on this today is Trump backs away from a broad ban on immigration, but many will still feel the effect of restrictions. And, you know, this is just the latest coronavirus development to hit immigrants harder than many other people. Notably, many immigrants who have been working here and paying taxes here will not be eligible for some of the relief programs. Another development this week that you may not have heard about is that the Supreme Court may take changing conditions from the coronavirus into account in the so-called DACA case it is now considering, involving young immigrants brought here as kids by their parents who grew up American but are undocumented. With me now is Sayo Bajwani. She was New York City's first immigration commissioner under Mayor Bloomberg after the people of the city created that position in the 2001 referendum. She is now founder and president of the group called New American Leaders, which supports immigrant political activity, and she is the author of People Like Us, The New Wave of Candidates Knocking at Democracy's Door, published in 2018. And once upon a time, she was a founder of South Asian Youth Action in Elmhurst, Queens, now an epicenter of coronavirus infections and deaths, ironically. Thanks for coming on, Sayu. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian. It's great to hear your voice.
Let me get right to the president's argument. You heard the clip, and on its face, a lot of people might say this makes sense. If we've gone from 3% unemployment to 13% unemployment overnight because of the public health crisis, maybe the next 60 days are not the time to be taking in more people who will want to find work, regardless of any other immigration politics. What's your reaction?
Well, look, I mean, I think you summarized it very well. I'd say more forcefully that this is part of the administration's kind of textbook case of white supremacy. They do three things: racialize everything, throw red meat to a base that is predominantly white, and engage in capricious and arbitrary announcements. And while we could fact check those and problematize what 60 days actually means, at the end of the day, as you said in the New York Times headline, the intention and the intended impact is already there. It's creating chaos and fear among immigrant communities who are not following every single tweet and announcement of the president and are already struggling with economic fragility and with the loss of lives. And so the intended impact is clear regardless of whether it makes any sense or not, and regardless of where he lands on this final executive order.
That Times headline, Trump backs away from a broad ban on immigration, but many will still feel effective restrictions. What parts does that refer to that he backed away from? I mentioned the guest workers who work mostly in agriculture. Anyone else?
Well, it's hard to say because it's hard to know what he intended, and it's also this announcement that we should close our borders seems inconsistent with the idea that we should reopen our state. So what is it? Should we be opening up our economy and returning to quote-unquote normal, or should we be closing our borders and protecting ourselves? And then the other point I would make is that there is a intentionality around, and we do this in New York as well, that we create a separation between Americans and immigrants, or New Yorkers and immigrants, when these groups are overlapping. You know, there are plenty of Americans, naturalized citizens, who are immigrants, and plenty of New Yorkers who are immigrants. So as a direct answer to your question, it's hard to say because we don't know what his intention was. Who was he intending to cover? And then the last point I just want to make on the 60 days, I mean, the process of getting approved for a green card is a pretty long process. So temporarily halting green card approvals for 60 days, for the average person applying for a green card, it's not necessarily a meaningful amount of time because it's usually a long arc. As someone who's actually been through the process, I can tell you that 60 days is a pretty inconsequential amount. Huh. And it just speaks to the fact that it's very arbitrary what he's saying.
So does that mean that this is more political theater than actual impact on potential immigrants' lives?
Yeah, I feel that he feels backed into a corner. We're watching the unemployment numbers grow, the economy continue to suffer, and he's pulling anything that he can possibly pull on to ensure that there's a victory in November. I think, you know, there's been a pattern of behavior on his part that indicates not just it's not just about winning an election, but it's also about self-preservation.
Who will be most affected by this?
What I want to not be guilty of doing the same thing that I see some of our leaders do, right, and to separate immigrants from Americans or immigrants from New Yorkers, that many of us are suffering, whether that's an emotional loss because of a loved one or an economic loss. But the impact, I think, is going to be the greatest on those who are most vulnerable because of their immigration status and most vulnerable because they just don't have, some of us have financial security or, you know, backups that we can rely on, and the most vulnerable in our society, whether they're immigrant or not, don't have that. And that's where I think we're going to see the most suffering.
But I'm not sure I understand that. Let me ask you to clarify that connection, because if the restriction is specifically on getting green cards or permanent residency status for the next 60 days, I think some of the most vulnerable you're talking about are undocumented immigrants who are not up for green card status based on their status, and some others who are not green card applicants right now. So what is that broader effect you're trying to describe?
Well, so for example, let's talk about someone who may be looking to adjust a status, right? So it might be someone who has a work permit, who has applied for a green card. And again, I just want to be clear that we're not exactly sure what is entailed in this executive order. But an example might be someone who is employed on a work visa and who is waiting to adjust their status from being what's called an H-1B worker to a green card holder. And so maybe there will be a temporary halt on that. It could be someone, let's say, who's a DACA recipient who may have been undocumented, has DACA now, possibly got married to someone who's a citizen, might be in line for a green card. So, but it could also be someone who lives outside of the United States. Say, for example, I applied for an adjustment of status for my mother. Mm-hmm. And my mother might be waiting in another country for a green card approval, and that will get delayed. So it's a wide range of people, and I want to be very clear that I'm not saying all of those people will be affected, but those are examples of the type of people who might be affected.
You want to comment on the role that immigrants are playing, Sayu, in the COVID economy? You know what I just said about when Mayor de Blasio gives a ticker tape parade for healthcare workers at the end of this, as he said yesterday, he plans to do, that will be a lot of immigrants that Wall Street will be dropping confetti on, won't it?
Yes, indeed. And, you know, the estimates are apparently that 9,200 New Yorkers in the state our DACA recipients specifically doing what is deemed essential work. So that's healthcare, grocery delivery, et cetera. And I think there's a tendency to value the work, you know, whether that's people taking care of our children, cleaning our buildings, delivering groceries, without valuing the people who are doing that work. There's a tendency to see them as just producers rather than as individual human beings. And I think, you know, my hope is that we're in a moment where we're going to be able to appreciate both the work and the individuals.
Let's take some phone calls. Babar in Norwalk, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Babar.
Hi, Brian. I'm in the food business here. I have a deli. I know other people in the business. And it was interesting to see after the first few weeks when we had to lay people off, after talking to the other owners, we all pretty much had the same mentality that it's better to let the citizens go and let the undocumented people keep working since they weren't going to get any government aid. And some of my employees are going to be better off with the extra $600 benefit, which is fine. It happens. But in my industry, at least, I feel like the undocumented immigrants might have gotten a benefit, generally because they do tend to be harder workers. And you felt bad for them. You know, this could go on for weeks and weeks and weeks now, and they would have no money coming from anywhere. It got to a point where last week I even laid myself off from my business.
Huh.
And I have three people out of seven still working. And all of them are undocumented.
Sayu, want to talk to Babar?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think if I were writing the stimulus check program, what I would have said is, besides the income threshold, let's give the check to everyone who filed a tax return in 2019 and 2018. And instead, what happened is that there was a decision that was not arbitrary to go through and kind of divide up who would get those checks. So you could have filed taxes as an undocumented immigrant and not be eligible for that stimulus check. So you've paid into a system that is not interested in supporting you. If you don't have a Social Security number, if you live with someone who is undocumented, you can't get the stimulus check, even if you have been paying taxes, even if you are continuing to work. And so these kinds of arbitrary but also intentional from the standpoint of hurting black and brown communities are so characteristic of this administration. And you shouldn't, Babar shouldn't have to make those kinds of choices. Those are not the choices that we want people to be making. We want the choices that protect everyone and are just and fair for everyone. That doesn't, you know, we shouldn't be privileging undocumented immigrants over others either. I think it's about creating an equitable playing field that also takes care of the people who pay into the system.
Babar, good luck. Thank you for telling us your story. I think it's really enlightening. Mohammed in Mill Basin, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And hi to your guest. I'm an immigrant from Gambia, West Africa, and I applied for immigrant visas for my wife and kids. They got approved for the immigrant visa 12 March. And soon after that, international travel was halted, so they couldn't travel, so they're still in Gambia. I'm not sure how this executive order will affect me, because their visas have an expiration date. It's up to August. And if they don't come, the visas expires. And if this executive order is extended and the visas expire, so I'm just wondering, you know, how this will affect me.
Interesting. Any idea, Sayu? Because it sounds like this immigration visa was approved before today, when the executive order would presumably take effect. Does this block that, even though it sounds like it's been approved?
Well, as I said, it's hard to say right now until we know the executive order, and I don't, you know, want to give specific legal immigration advice. But I think it's great for Mohammed to share his story so that people understand the many ways in which folks who are living here are affected by this, that
yes.
our country and our society is not just about the economy, right? It's about families and it's about community and connection, and all of that is at stake when an executive order that decides who can and cannot come into this country or when they can come in is passed. So that we have to look at our society as a whole and not just as a production-based society.
Mohammed, I guess your immigration lawyer, I imagine you have one, if that green card got approved or that visa got approved, or maybe you'll need to get one or go through an immigration clinic if you can't afford a private one and get the particular advice on that. And I hope it works out. Here's another personal story, I think. Nora in Mount Olive in New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nora.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. I respect you so much.
Thank you.
My story is that I'm an immigrant from Honduras. I'm a small business owner. I'm a single mom. And with these crazy times that we live in, I am also waiting for my green card. I have adjust status from TPS, this protection. Then I got married, so I got the waiting for my green card, and I'm separated from my husband because domestic violence.
Oh.
And now I'm in limbo, and I am the main provider for my child. And what she is saying, you guess, Saya, it's really true. He is adding fear to this problem that we're having with the virus going around, protecting our families. And on top of that, I don't know what's going to happen.
Nora, without the green card that you've applied for, can you stay anyway long term and continue to provide for your family?
Well, that's the big question. I think my only document right now is my driving license, which expires in August. Besides that, the temporary green card that I have is already expired. So I'm waiting for the changes, mm-hmm. adjustment of status. The answer is I don't know. I think I'm going to be in limbo, or I don't know.
In limbo. Nora, thank you. And I think the answer, unfortunately, is going to be the same, right, Sayu? We really don't know yet exactly how this will affect her. And we've only got a few more minutes in the segment, but I think what we've demonstrated on the phones is how this affects individuals, everybody who's called in. And we've had them from all three states in our immediate area, from New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And we hear, a million stories in the New York metropolitan area, and so many people who are obviously hardworking, earnest people, you can just tell from their phone calls, with family situations, who were suddenly thrown into limbo by this. So if nothing else, we put a human face on the ambiguities.
Right, and I think that the good news such as there is that there are a lot of nonprofit organizations either focused on the legal side of this or on the direct side, service side of this, who are doing a lot of work and staying pretty vigilant about fighting back, on the one hand fighting back against the Trump administration, and on the other hand directly supporting and serving community members. And so that's one of the beautiful things about the strong civil society that we have in America. And the beautiful things about our immigrant communities and the resilience, and as you said, the hardworking earnestness of all of us who are here. But every example that we just heard are people who are already here, right? Mohammed's waiting for his family, but these are people who are already embedded in our society. They are not some group of newcomers or outsiders. They're all people who are already part of our communities, and it's just important for us to remember that it's our responsibility as Americans to recognize the full range of who we are as a country.
One irony is that people leaving the United States may be more of a danger, considering how hard hit we are by coronavirus, than people coming in, at least from a lot of places. I don't know if you saw the article in the Wall Street Journal this week. I have it in front of me. Headline, Guatemala asks U.S. government to ensure that deportees are free from COVID-19. And right. The conflict here is that the U.S. has been deporting people back to Guatemala who are turning out to be COVID infected. And Guatemala, which doesn't have much intrinsic COVID, is saying, hey, United States, check your deportees before you send them back here and infect our country. You know, quarantine people for 14 days, whatever is necessary. Don't be a risk to our country because of your immigration politics. And the U.S. is rebelling against that, saying it might cut off visas from Guatemala if they continue to press that standard. So that's just an irony of this whole thing. Before you go, Sayu, are you following the DACA Supreme Court case and how coronavirus might actually change the outcome of that, even though the justices already heard the case?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think at the end of the day, the outcome is not ideal in that it doesn't create a good permanent solution. But obviously one outcome where they uphold the executive order for DACA recipients is better than them sort of saying that we have to send it back to Congress, because I don't see how we're going to, in the short term, get a bill from Congress that provides a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. So it's a really critical component. And you, as you know, there's 27,000 DACA recipients who are healthcare workers in our country now, and so they stand to be affected by the Supreme Court decision.
Sayu Bhujwani, who was New York City's first immigration commissioner when that position was created under Mayor Bloomberg. She is now founder and president of the group New American Leaders and author of the book People Like Us, The New Wave of Candidates Knocking at Democracy's Door, which was published in 2018. Sayu, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is obviously also a daily coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.